Last year, I shared a sermon called Spirit Power, Everyday Buddhism in Myanmar. Like I said, don't worry if you didn't. I don't expect you to remember something that I said over a year ago. But I spoke about the Buddhism of my childhood, not as a philosophy or doctrine, but as something woven into my life and the people of Myanmar. In Myanmar, Buddhism isn't reserved for holy days. It lives in daily practice, taking off your shoes before entering a pagoda, offering food to monks, lighting incense, making merit, and passing through the day to remember that our actions matter. And it lives in places. Some of my earliest experiences of the sacred were in and around Buddhist temples. There was the temple itself, of course, but also the courtyard around it. The trees, the sounds, the people coming and going, the smell of the incense. And there was also, if you look for it, a labyrinth, as Ruth sang about, which helped with the feeling that you had stepped out of ordinary life for a little while. But long before humans built temples, we found sacred spaces in nature. Many traditions we now call pagan find the sacred in particular trees, springs, stones, mountains, and groves. And that's integrated also into Burmese Buddhism and the idea of a knot, which is a spirit. And a sacred space doesn't necessarily need boundaries. The natural world itself can be a sacred space. And Buddhism has its own deep relationship with trees. As you saw in the Children for All Ages, Buddha went under a tree, and he awakened beneath a tree. And furthermore, he taught in forest groves, and he's said to have died between two saw trees. So trees are very integral to Buddhism. And in some of the earliest Buddhist teachings, the instructions for meditation are remarkably simple, which began as I began our meditation, which is go to the forest or to the foot of a tree, sit down, notice your breathing. Perhaps the distinction between a temple and a tree isn't as great as we imagine. We have a tree right here in our own sacred space. Both can be places where we stop, as we are doing this morning, where we pay attention, where sometimes we encounter something beyond ourselves. So today, I want to focus on less on Buddhist culture, which is what I focused on last time, and more on spiritual practice, because sacred places alone don't create sacred spiritual experiences. We have to show up, as you are doing this morning, again and again. In Buddhism, there is a word which I'm probably going to mispronounce, bhavana, often translated as meditation. But a more literal translation is cultivation. And in fact, as I mentioned, there are many different forms of meditation. There's standing, there's walking, it's not just sitting under a tree, although that's what the children's book described, but it's for kids. It's about cultivation, cultivating patience, cultivating compassion, cultivating wisdom. And it's also like tending a garden. It can't be forced. You can't sit there and go, I'm going to meditate. I'm going to, somehow all the bad thoughts are going to come from my mind if I just sit here like this. It's actually relaxation and just allowing those thoughts to pass through you. I think that's one of the things that perhaps when I was first starting meditation, especially with a movement disorder, I thought, oh, I have to be still. And it's more that stillness find you. It comes from returning to yourself again and again. And as I mentioned, in Myanmar, Buddhism and natural spirits are woven into ordinary life. And as I mentioned, we pour water over the image of the Buddha and the gnat representing the day of the week we were born. We offer flowers knowing they will wilt. We light incense knowing it will burn out. We bow. These acts train the heart and the mind. They remind us that ritual matters, that generosity matters, that paying attention matters, which is what we're doing right now. But my religious upbringing was complicated, as probably many of you have experienced. Apart from my visits to Myanmar, I went to Episcopalian church every Sunday with my English father, which has plenty of ritual, which I really enjoyed. And I did Bible study, so I really understood the Bible. And I have to say, I had a very complicated relationship with the Bible. And by the time I went to college, I was becoming increasingly uncomfortable with Christian doctrine and with Christianity being used to justify a hierarchy of beings, which is very not Buddhist. I mean, in the Bible, it literally says that God gave dominion over all these things, right? And women are taken from Adam's rib. So there's a hierarchy intrinsic in the Bible. And so my religious practice, like me, was half English and half Burmese. But unlike now, I did not feel whole. Like many people in college, I was trying to figure out how to integrate the different parts of myself. I met friends who talked to me not about knots, but about spirits of air, fire, water, and earth. Initially, I couldn't relate. It's pretty abstract to me. Then one of these friends told me about a tree spirit on campus. I could relate to that. In Myanmar, certain trees have spirits. My friend told me that she sat against this tree every day for an hour as part of her spiritual practice, and that it had been a profound experience. I'd never met a tree spirit before. I wasn't sure I would, but I needed to do something. I needed to be whole. And so I felt, I wouldn't say a calling to this tree, but at least I felt I should at least try it. And something called me to this tree, and I sat with it, my back against the trunk of the tree for about an hour. Nothing happened. But something made me come back. So almost every day, I came back and I just sat against the trunk of the tree. I wasn't trying to meditate. I wasn't expecting enlightenment. I was simply waiting to see what might unfold. Day after day, week after week, I watched the light change through the leaves. I listened to birds. I felt the rough bark against my back. Honestly, the tree seemed to simply be there. Then one day, something shifted. The only way I know how to describe it is that the tree noticed me. I know how strange that sounds. I don't mean that I heard a voice. I don't mean that the tree suddenly became a person. I don't even mean I understood the tree. I experienced the tree becoming aware of me. And I simply mean that I felt another being beside me, as you are sitting in your chairs and you might feel another person beside you. Not symbolically, but profoundly and unmistakably present. And what I also felt was a sense of rooted, reaching towards life, and a very different pace of time. Its passage of time was so much slower than mine that perhaps the tree didn't notice me until I had spent enough time there. Or maybe the tree had noticed me all along but needed to move more into my sense of time. I don't know. I don't understand the language of trees. And it was one of the deepest experiences of transcendence I have ever had. I don't expect anyone else to have that exactly the same experience. Spiritual experiences are deeply personal. But I do believe they become more likely when we faithfully return to a spiritual practice with patience, humility, and attention. We cannot force transcendence. We can only prepare ourselves to receive it. And that experience changed my spiritual practice. After that day, I became more aware of trees in the places I frequently went, and I realized nature could be a temple. I began my spiritual practice in nature. It took me years to understand another change that was happening. I stopped asking for specific outcomes. I still pray for good health, for equity, for other things that I think are generally good. But I no longer ask for life to unfold according to my plans, which is what I did in my youth. Because I don't know enough. The older I become, the more I'm aware of how much I don't know. I don't know all the consequences of getting what I've asked for, and I've literally prayed and got for what I asked for, and then been very unhappy with the results. What seems like an answer today may have consequences I cannot foresee. What feels like a disappointment today may lead somewhere I could never have imagined. That doesn't mean I stop hoping or praying. It means I become more willing to sit with ambiguity. Instead of trying to direct the universe, which I would love to do, I try to cultivate the qualities that allow me to meet whatever comes with compassion, courage, and wisdom. Perhaps that is the greatest gift that tree gave me. Not certainty, presence. Not answers, attention. Not control, humility. Years later, I realized that what happened beneath that tree was integrated with the Buddhism of my childhood. These everyday practices, slowing down, paying attention, cultivating, had quietly prepared me for that encounter. And perhaps people who regard particular trees and groves as sacred understand something similar. A tree does not need to be a human being to be another being. We talk about the interconnected web of life. And we're learning that plants perceive and respond to their environments in extraordinarily complex ways. Trees both work together and compete for light, water, and nutrients. They send chemical signals. They interact with fungi and other organisms in ways we are still trying to understand. We don't understand plants nearly as well as we sometimes imagine we do. I find something spiritual in admitting that plants are not lower than animals just because I don't understand them. And the more we learn, the more we discover how much we don't know. That is true of trees, it's true of other people, and it's true of ourselves. And perhaps spiritual Practice begins with that humility. The Buddhist monk Thanik Hun used the word interbeing. Nothing exists by itself. Look deeply at a tree and you will find rain, sunlight, soil, fungi, insects, generations of other trees, and eventually us, because we share a lot of DNA with a tree. We too exist because of relationships we can see and relationships we cannot. And this brings me back to Unitarian Universalism. I came here because by then I had children, and my previous spiritual practice took about 3 continuous hours every quarter. 3 continuous hours is a lot when you have kids. I needed a spiritual practice that could fit into my life. That was my thought when I came here. An hour a week sounded possible. I didn't know what to expect. I came here again with curiosity and humility. And what I found was a community in which we don't all have to understand the sacred in the same way. We come from many theological traditions. Some of us see spirit in God. Some find it in nature. Some encounter it through human relationships, music, justice, work, reason, or wonder. Some of us aren't even sure that spirit is even the right word. We don't need to agree about what spirit or what transcendent is, or even if they exist, in order to practice becoming more receptive to it and being here together in this space. And UUs have spiritual practices, even if we don't always call them that. We light a chalice. We sing together. We share silence. Now we meditate before the beginning of every service. We volunteer. We listen deeply. We show up for one another. And spiritual practice doesn't have to look like Christianity. It might be walking, gardening, making tea, sitting quietly with an animal we love, or sitting beneath a tree. The particular practice matters less than the returning to it. The Buddha did not promise that spiritual practice would remove all suffering. And by suffering, I mean that all things die. And our attachment to that is what causes suffering. But that's not wrong. I think for some people, they get confused that that is wrong. No, that is to be human, is to be attached to things. We need to eat, we need to have a relationship with other people, and that intrinsically causes suffering because everything is impermanent. But what the Buddha says is our relationship to suffering can change. We can become a little bit more patient, a little less reactive, a little more compassion, and perhaps a little bit more comfortable saying, I don't know. And I know that at some point this will end. And there will be another beginning. So I'd like to leave you with an invitation. This week, find a place where you can be still. Or walk, since this is, perhaps it is beneath a tree. Perhaps it is in a garden. Perhaps it is here. Perhaps it is in our labyrinth. Return to it. You don't have to be there for an hour. Don't ask any of it. Don't try to make anything happen. Just notice. Notice what's around you. Notice the sounds. Notice your breathing. Maybe nothing extraordinary will happen. That's all right. Nothing can promise transcendence. We cannot force it. We can only prepare ourselves to receive it. Perhaps that is something Burmese Buddhism, pagan traditions that find sacredness in the natural world and Unitarian Universalists can offer one another. Different sacred spaces, different practices, different understandings of the sacred, but a shared human impulse to stop, to have a ritual, to pay attention, and to be in a space where you encounter something beyond the boundaries of ourselves. May we each find our own sacred spaces. May we each cultivate a practice that helps us become more aware. And may we have the humility to live with what we cannot know. And may we remain open to those rare moments when something we thought we were simply observing suddenly seems to notice us too. Thank you.